dying. A nurse discovered that not everyone who leaves a room is truly gone.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. And yes, we'd love to hear your real ghost stories at 855-853-4802. And you can write in at realghoststoriesonline.com if you want access to advanced episodes, ad-free episodes, and just support the program. Check us out on Patreon. Search Real Ghost Stories Online, and also Apple Podcasts, our premium channel on there for you as well. Tony, Todd, Carol, hi. How is everyone doing this fine January purgatory cold dark season from the depths of hell?
I'll let Todd answer that because my dog is barking. Gotta turn my mic down.
It is actually just after the holidays, and I am glad they're over. In the radio business, it's always one of those things where it's a really, really busy time of year. And when people always say, hey, you having a great holiday season? You know, back in the day when Tony and I were working together, it was preparing for the Christmas music switch over. There was all that work. And then you'd finally get into it, and you were still making tweaks and stuff, and then you come out of it, and that's got to be a big changeover.
Yeah.
So
it was so much work.
And what's funny about it is, at least now when they do Christmas music, they really make it worth their while, because they're playing it for like 2 months.
Yeah.
When we were doing it, we did it for like 3 days.
We did it the day after Thanksgiving through Christmas Day.
Yes, but I'm talking 24/7 Christmas music.
We did. Well, I'm not sure if you, when you were there, we did that.
That was post 9/11. Nobody did it prior to 9/11. That it started that year. That was like one of the shocking things. Suddenly AC stations that year were like, let's do something to be more festive early, because everybody's feeling like shit. So let's start playing Christmas music in like October. And they did. And it was a fucking hit.
Yep. And it still is to this day. All the stations that do it get huge ratings. They make a ton of freaking money. Yep. And any listeners who complain about it, it's all about the bug, baby. If you're getting bucks for
exactly. That's how that started, was that. And yes, we always did play Christmas music, but we played like 2 an hour, 3 an hour. I think we upped it by the week, depending on how close we were. And then Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, we were 24/7 Christmas.
You're right.
That was it. And we put so much damn work into that 48-hour period.
I know, and then all the sponsors that had to be recorded, and those had to be put on the log, and oh my God. And somebody had to come in during the day to check on all the stations. And
at the end of the day, two of the least listened to days of radio.
Probably. You're right. Thank God, because half the songs weren't even Christmas. A lot of them were R&B B-side cuts from Tony's home collection that somehow made it onto the air.
Here's a B-side from the Tony Rich Project.
Those days I hated them because I was filled with stress. I would listen constantly just to make sure that there were no problems. And I never trusted the on-air system, and I never trusted Tony.
Kept giving me responsibilities.
You had to learn somehow. You had to fuck up and learn somehow.
I did. And I destroyed a lot of things.
Thank God my memory's not as good as it used to be. I've forgotten all of your fuck ups.
No, it was fun. I enjoyed fun. My favorite was that I never got caught for.
Good to know.
I don't know if you were still there or not. And it was after a high school sports game, and we were going back to Delilah. And I was trying to hit the top of the hour on it. So I was like back timing it, and then I hit the jingle, and you know, I talked up the ramp, and I thought that was really exciting because I was rarely like on the air live. And then like, okay, pot up Delilah, meaning you turn it on, and then if the timing's right, their jingle should start perfectly, and then it goes into the show. Hit it on. There's nothing there. And it's like, it was a screw up on their part. They were off on their time. And like, cause it was like 8 seconds in, all of a sudden it's like the harp start playing. But before that harp started playing and Delilah goes, "Hi, it's Mother Delilah," there was Tony on the air going, "Where the fuck is Delilah?" And then, "Hi, it's Mother Delilah," you know, and then Delilah. And then, "I keep forgetting we're not in love anymore." And yeah. And I was like, oh shit.
God, I wish I'd heard like, that.
I'm just waiting for like the phone's call, you know. Nobody got it.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Luckily, it was right after high school sports. So maybe the people who were listening had already tuned out, or there weren't a lot of people listening to that. So,
or they were, yeah, three sheets to the wind. And
right. Like, look at those people sharing that story. It's like, this one time I was listening to the radio.
Yeah, right.
This guy was like,
I wish I had an air check of that.
Oh my God, I wish. That's funny.
Let's go to a phone call. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Hi, let's hear it.
I am a nurse from Indiana, and I have worked as a hospice nurse for the last almost 2 years. And I just left a job where our facility was haunted. And I'm going to just share a couple of the stories with you. Fifth floor of a hospital was just a hospice unit. It had used to, a long time ago, used to be part of an experimental drug unit. It had two sides. One was our hospice side that had 7 rooms for patients. The other side were offices used for that were locked at night. And, of course, I worked the midnight shift most times. So there would be nobody in those offices at night, and there would be one nurse and one aide. The unit was locked, so the only way in was if security let you in. So it was quiet. We had a nurse's station. We had a kitchen area. We had storage areas. And we had another large storage area down the empty side of the hall that housed a refrigerator. It was a room down there that housed extra beds and a refrigerator. But you only went in there if you had to store your stuff. So we were working nights, and I had a patient that was actively passing. So I was in his room quite often, and the adjoining room had been dark most of the night. And in the middle of the night, as I'm leaving the room of my patient, I noticed the light coming in from the empty room, and went in and looked and found the TV on. Well, the TV, in order to turn the TV on, was from a remote that had been attached to the wall, and you had to walk around the bed to turn it on. So the TV was fuzzy and didn't think anything of it, and thought maybe just I hadn't noticed it previously all night because I was busy with my patients who had been passing. And I went and turned off the TV and went out the room and into the hall and went down to the nurse's station and came back about another 15 minutes later to check on my patient, and happened to look into the room again, and the TV was on again. And I thought, wow, this is kind of strange. So I called my aide down to look at it with me, because we've had happenings going on in this unit for quite a while. So we're a little jumpy when things like this happen. So I called her in, and I had her stand by the door while I walked into the room to check the TV. And on the TV screen was a picture of a crucifix staring down brightly. And I didn't know where this was coming from. And it was just like a live feed. It looked like from a chapel area. Well, we went and into another patient's room closer to the nurse's station and tested the different channels to see if this same image was showing up on other TVs. And sure enough, it was the live feed from our chapel on a lower floor. So I went back to the room And as I had my aide stand by the door, I walked into the room around the side of the bed to turn this TV off again for the second time, and turned the TV off, made sure it was off, walked out of the room again. And both of us had said that if this TV turns back on again, we are out of here. We're leaving our patients and abandoning the floor because this was getting too freaky. Well, the next morning I asked, when I got relieved, I talked to the other nurses and I asked about that room and if they remember who had been in it, why that channel, because I don't remember ever seeing a live feed channel and why that channel would have been on in that room. And we come to find out through a little bit of investigation that the last woman patient to use that room had watched the church channel, would watch the mass from the third floor, but she had died about 2 or 3 weeks previous, and that room had not been used since. So it was kind of eerie that she came back and she turned on the TV for me so that I could watch this image of Christ shining on the bed. One of the other things is that this unit had 7 rooms, and the last 2 rooms had very strange feelings coming from them. We people who were sensitive to that kind of stuff felt a bad presence in both rooms 6 and 7. We hardly ever used them, but occasionally. But it was my job every night as I came on duty to check each room and go in and make sure everything was okay. And in room 7, I had gone not suspecting anything, just walked into the room to check it. I walked to the window, and as I walked to the window, I heard a kind of gurgling sound, like coming from the corner of the room. And I turned around, hightailed it, and ran out of that room faster than I'd ever run before to the nurse's station to get my aid. And I had never heard that kind of a sound coming from an empty room. With my aide again, we were always a team. I walked back down there and we didn't see anything in the room. The room was dark and, nothing, we could find nothing. From then I would, if I had to, when I came on duty, I would, check all the rooms while it was still daylight and shut the door and make sure that those doors were shut tight so that nobody would, I didn't have to go back in there at night anymore. So these kind of things happened, or that room, it happened one more time about a month or two later. I had to walk in there actually with a patient in the room, heard that sound again coming from the same area. And it was just a gurgling growl kind of a noise, but I had a patient in there and not sure where, why, or how, who was making that sound. Come after about 6 to 8 months of this, where it got to the point where none of us wanted to go to work, or if we did, I mean, you were just, things were going to happen and it was scary to go to work anymore. The boss had come in and actually had the stuff happen to her. And so shortly after that, we've got a member of the parish, the church affiliation, came in and blessed every room, every door, every possible spot in that, and on our floor, in our facility, blessed them, said a prayer in each room, each and every room. And shortly thereafter, all the strange occurrences stopped, to the dismay of my sister, who loves this kind of stuff. And I would have to call into her nightly. And then the occurrences stopped for about the last 2 months of me working there. And fortunately, I have left that position and now work a full-time day job. Thank you and have a great evening.
I love stories from facilities like that. I find them very fascinating because they just seem to be, you know, almost like, not to be like beehives of this sort of activity.
Especially a hospice floor.
Yeah, and just... You know, if you want an interesting place to study that and have a good chance at experiencing something, I think those are like your best bets, you know, and to so many stories from people who work there. I mean, that has got to be the emotional toll that must take. I don't know how one does it for a very long period of time.
I was actually thinking during that, just blessings to all the people who work in hospice. It's not easy knowing that every person that you come in contact with in that facility is going to be passing away. So there's that heaviness.
Yeah.
But to hear stories like this, I mean, they're seeing death every day.
Yeah.
And they're dealing with that on a human level. And to know that the paranormal side of that, which they may be experiencing, is so frightful to them is also kind of interesting as well.
Yeah.
I worked at that hospice for about a year.
You did?
I think.
Yeah, you did.
And, you know, it was the people who do that work. It's very, very important work. I think it's very important to have people like that to help at that time when that time comes. So very, very difficult for them. Then when you add in, when you work on a hospice floor, because a lot of hospices are in people's homes, so they take everything into the home. But when you work on a floor like that, every patient who comes in, no one ever leaves.
Right.
You know, and I mean, people can go off hospice, but when you go into an inpatient hospice.
Yeah.
It's time. Yeah. So I found that one with a TV coming. There's nobody in the room. There's no reason the TV should be turning on and off. And then how eerie to walk in and it's like a live feed of just a cross.
I guess it depends on one's perspective. I guess one could walk in and go, isn't that the most beautiful thing in the world? And I'm sure it is to some people. I would be kind of creeped out by it. Not because like I'm adverse to the cross. I would just feel like that, just the imagery out of place at that moment in time is what makes it feel odd. Not the cross itself.
But wouldn't you feel better? Like if you walked in and it was the Golden Girls.
The Golden Girls, Sanford and Son. Is that what you're saying?
Anything.
Well, I guess, would it be
like TV, the news?
Would it have stood out though as much though if it were that? Let's do a thought experiment, as Robin Drake says over on the Hidden Killers podcast. If you walked in and it was the Golden Girls, and it's just playing, would you be weirded out? Would you be thinking, it's the Golden Girls?
I would be weirded out, but I'd be like, oh, it's the Golden Girls. Seeing that symbolism and then finding out that the woman who passed in that room watched that channel.
Right. But what if, to get the tie-in, that's really what I think is what makes it. So if you found out she loved watching Game Show Network and, you know, old reruns of Pat Sajak are on, you go, okay.
Well, that makes sense. You would walk in and have always loved Pat Sajak.
And it's even weirder.
And it's like, ooh, this is weird.
It's even weirder when it's the Pat Sajak show episodes.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, where it's the late night talk show, but it's the outtakes from the Pat Sajak show that you could only buy on season 1, episode 4. During the second commercial break, you could get an autographed The Pat Sajak Show outtakes. They only sold 7 copies. And that one VHS copy happens to be playing in that room at that very moment.
And there's not even a VCR in the room.
In a VCR in the room. Yeah. And the moment they press stop at that exact second, TMZ reports Pat Sajak dies.
Oh, my God.
Boom!
The fact that anybody in my life remembers the Pat Sajak show and how horrible it was is pretty special to me.
Would you guess anything less?
I think you're right. The imagery is very scary. If I walked into a room and the Golden Girls popped on, I'd sit and watch for a few and recite some of the script. But if I shut it off and it came back on, for me, I'd be like, well, there must be something wrong with the remote or whatever. But the cross, right? Even in my studio here, I've got the cross behind me, behind one of my shoulders. And it freaks me out a little bit. The whole gothic thing and the cross, there's a little bit of creepiness there if I walk into a church and it's empty. Creepy. Yeah. There's a creepy feeling with that.
I always feel like you're in a steeple.
I am.
That's what it looks like. I mean, but you're on the ground level with that's creepy. Now, if the cross is like behind you, like suddenly like rise and invert.
You know what? I might try and rig that up for the next time.
You
can do that.
You can just make it into a video there you go.
Inverted crosses.
And then when people ask you about it, you're like, oh my God, I don't know how it's a still.
Right.
Do you have another ghost story?
Yeah, we do.
All right. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Hi.
Hello, this is Selena calling again from Woodstock, Ontario, Canada. So I want to call today and share a story about kind of how my life got started with ghosts. It dates back to my parents buying their first house, which was in 1989. They bought a house that was actually only 2 years old, and the people who built it had only built it 6 months prior before moving, and there was no reason. They didn't ask back then. So my parents moved into this house in July of 1989. And the first thing that they noticed was the sound of kind of like a music box, but they kind of chopped it down to it being wind chimes and the windows being open because they didn't have an air conditioner yet. But the reason they found that odd was when winter came and everything was closed, the sound of this jewelry box was continuing. So when my mom got pregnant with me, things enhanced a little bit. And at the top of the basement stairs, there'd be those catches of light, almost like dust, but far too big to be dust. And things at like a child's height, like a 5-year-old, 10-year-old's height, would be like flipped over or moved out. Just things that could be coincidence, but at the same time made you very curious. So after I was born, again, things got weirder. My mom at first didn't think too much of it, but thought, you know, if it was something, maybe it's just a family member checking out the new first baby. So a few of the things that happened when I was very, very young, when I was first starting to crawl, my mom woke up to my like gagging sounds, and I was actually on the floor in her bedroom. Somehow, I really wasn't able to pull myself up yet. I was more just able to crawl. I had made my way. Someone had taken me out of the crib and taken me right into my parents' room. Once I started talking, I developed a bit of an imaginary friend, which, you know, was very, very common. But the thing my mom found odd is that I called my imaginary friend Mary Agnes. I said that she died a long time ago and she was 10 years old. Still, again, my mom didn't think too much into it until she was pregnant with my brother. And she went downstairs and she swore she saw me sitting underneath the kitchen table. I was 3 at the time, until she got closer and noticed that this little girl was wearing a bonnet and like the old school white nightie that they would have worn late 1800s, early 1900s. So my mom got a bit more confused. In a way, I can say she's confused, but in another way, I can say she isn't, because she grew up with a lot of the same things and kind of wished for this, I'm guessing, for my brother and I not to have to go through that kind of situation. It got to the point where at night I was talking constantly up all night, and it got to the point where I couldn't even sleep in the dark. So my mom would read me Harry Potter every night, and she would leave and turn the light off when I fell asleep. This night, she had turned the light off and went to run her bath, and I woke up, and I'm like, Mom, you need to come turn on the light. And this is one of those larger houses with the big hallway, but you could see the bathroom. So she was rushing to my room to turn on my light, and it actually turned on by itself. That's when my mom decided to contact a local historian who actually knows a lot about Woodstock and the founding members of the town. So she had her over and they mapped out the property, gridded it all up, and found that the Nellis family, one of the founding families of Woodstock, which actually their plot is in our local cemetery, and they actually donated a road to Woodstock for the farmers market, which is still there. So I guess the Nellis family lost the majority of their children at the end of the 1800s, the scarlet fever. Being the family that they were, they did have a picture, and they were naming the children off my parents. And then they got down to the end, and there was a 10-year-old. And they're like, this is 10-year-old Mary Agnes Nellis, and she died of scarlet fever at 10 years old. I have to say the truth that after that, and my mother finding out what was going on, that really dissipated. I'm going to save more of the stories that happened in my childhood and send them in again. I love your show so much. So I hope you guys are having a good day. Bye.
Thanks for sharing that story. Thoughts on all that?
If you don't want your child to haunt anybody, don't name them Mary Agnes.
Right?
That is a ghost name right there.
Yeah.
Mary Agnes, where are you, darling?
I'm here, mommy.
You know, that whole thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of retro names that have come back in recent years. Like I feel it's interesting. Like I feel like my daughter's class, the names could be straight out of like a strange mixture of yearbooks from like the 1920s all the way to today.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, there's such an interesting mix of names, but one that's never come back, Agnes. I haven't heard a lot of Agneses, you know, other than, you know, some rather older, you know, not even boomers, probably World War II generations.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what do you want to call our kid, honey? Let's call her Agnes.
Agnes.
She
can go by Aggie.
Yeah.
You know, somebody wants to go by Aggie. Let's go see Aggie at the truck stop. It's just, I'm sorry to anybody named Aggie.
That is one of those names that we were talking about that recently because my niece and nephews had babies.
Yeah.
And it's like picking a name that sets your child up for success.
Yeah.
And so my niece is Charlotte. And it was like, well, yes, because Charlotte Ruth, they named her after Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Sure.
So it's like that. You're setting her up for success, right? Yeah. Agnes, you are setting her up to work in a diner.
Yeah. I mean, right? I guess it could, if you end up picking up a British accent, it sounds better. Like Agnes, I'm Agnes.
Then that, I think, yeah. I guess
it's the inflection, I guess, in how you deliver it.
I had these neighbors and they named their child Atlas. Mm-hmm. And I've heard a couple other kids named Atlas recently. And I'm like, man, but what if your kid is a waiter? And, you know, what if your kid doesn't live up to the Atlas name?
That's true.
That's a lot. Yeah. On a kid. That's a lot of name.
With Agnes, I think about St. Agnes in Fond du Lac, the hospital.
That's what I was just thinking of. Yeah.
And also the fact that the nunnery was there, right? The Sisters of St. Agnes. So there's a creepy religious connotation with my mind on that as well.
Is that building gone?
Remember, it kind of burned down a little bit.
Okay, that makes it even creepier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it gone though? Did they tear it?
I think it was ruined enough that they had to take it down. Don't quote me on that, but yeah.
Yeah. It was like right by the hospital, and it was there. Like, I think it was like the original hospital, basically. Wasn't it? They kind of used that as part.
Could be.
Like when it began. And then like the modern hospital circa whenever that was built is there. And there was different parts to that. There was an older part and a newer part. But that old building was kind of gothic-y, wasn't it?
Yeah, just like the stuff behind me. Those kind of windows were in it, and the Sisters of St. Agnes, and they started the hospital.
Yeah,
and there was a group of them, and then it like dwindled down. You know, all of them died, and there's like two or three Sisters of St. Agnes left. So
it was like a castle. I mean, maybe it's bigger in my mind as a big
Victorian type facility.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, but it was something, and it stood out like a sore thumb because it's in the middle of this kind of neighborhood that's
right,
you know, and the neighborhood had a lot of old buildings in it too, but this was just even older looking because of the gothicness of it, but yeah, gosh.
Oh, I'm looking it up right now, just because I'm curious.
Yeah,
Sisters of St. Agnes.
The Sisters.
We used to call the hospital St. Agony.
Yeah, never. Yeah, there was a lot of, yeah. I think I would opt to drive to another town.
Back then, I think it's different now. It's owned by a different corporation now and all that kind of stuff.
Okay,
SMS or something like that. But yeah.
You know what I did? I did enjoy going to the cafeteria.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it. Because it was one of those hospital cafeterias and actually not that bad.
It wasn't that bad. And it was the only cafeteria like we had in the, at least when I was around, because everything else was gone. I would just hear the stories. I would hear the lore of the cafeterias of yesteryear. And I was like, I want to see a cafeteria. Then I was like, oh, well, this is like a cafeteria. Okay, I get it. It's kind of like a buffet in a way, you know. And I get my little, you know, bowl of Jell-O that, you know, had the saran wrap on it. And you slide down and get whatever. And yeah, I enjoyed the cafeteria at St. Agnes Hospital.
So I did look it up, and yes, it was demolished.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is there pictures online?
It was pretty something.
Yeah.
There's some pictures online of it. Yeah. Sad.
Yeah, very much so. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up this episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you would like to share your real ghost story with us, you can do so. 855-853-4802 is the phone number, or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. Get in on all of the extras, ad-free, everything, and you're supporting the program. Patreon, check it out. Search Real Ghost Stories Online and also on Apple Podcasts as well. Until next time, for Carol and Todd, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.